It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy and Renee are here to talk about the latest, what happened to Apple's stock this week. Why did it go down and then back up? We'll talk about the class action lawsuit that's been going on for 10 years now and has no more plaintiffs. Everybody's dropped out. Plus updates to iOS and OS 10. It's all ahead with Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and if you'd like to help us design our new website, I invite you to visit twit.to/navtest. We've got 8 quick questions we'd like to ask you that will help us make the navigation easier to use. That's twit.to/navtest. Thanks a lot. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 432, recorded December 9th, 2014. Turn up the pimp juice. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Oscar, a new approach to healthcare that focuses only on health plans for individuals and their families. To learn more about health insurance plans and get a quote, go to hioscar.com/MacBreak, New York and New Jersey only. And by Squarespace. Squarespace just launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, with a completely redesigned interface, integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps, new templates, and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace at squarespace.com. And don't forget to use the offer code MacBreak at checkout to get 10% off. And by audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the latest Mac news. And a tip of the hat to Mike Elgin for filling in for me at the last minute last week. Foodborne illness, I believe, took me out last week. But thank you, Mike. He did a great job. Andy Iannocco is back from the Chicago Sun-Times. Welcome, Andy.
Chicken sushi is never a deal, no matter what the price.
Also, Renee Ritchie from Montreal. Hello, Renee.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
iMore.com. We had Serenity Caldwell on Twit on Sunday, and it reminded me how mad I am at you. She's stealing Serenity away. She's just awesome.
She has her own agency, but she is terrific.
Yes. She still is in Boston and she didn't have to move to Montreal or anything, did she?
No. Nope.
Are you having, I understand there's a nor'easter.
There's a nor'colder, whatever.
Nor'easter. So both, I guess the Eastern Seaboard's suffering a little bit of a storm right now.
Yeah, we got like rain like hell all day today. Which is fine if you have just lots of little errands to run inside the house as opposed to little errands outside the house.
Yes, so. Run errands inside the house today. That's a great idea. We're going to have our own little 4-year storm on Thursday. So
we're cold, so it's not raining. It's snowing.
Yikes.
Andy, solid form.
It was a little bit of a tempest this week in the stock market. Apple stock dropped. I looked at the Apple stock price, I think yesterday, the day before, and I went, what the heck happened? It's coming back up now. It's to 113. But it very briefly just took a dive on December, I guess it started December 8th. Pew! And everybody's wondering, what the heck? What happened? Why was Apple at 115 on Friday and down to 110 on Tuesday? Well, the thinking is now it was high-frequency trading. It was program trading.
Yeah, I heard a statistic just the other day that were asked about 15 or 20 years ago. I'm sorry, a period of time ago, the average length at which a stock was held before being sold was something like 4 years, and now it's 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So maybe this has an effect upon the economy that we don't really thought through.
Yeah, and that's because the average is brought down by these machines that do trades over microseconds of time. Great, Michael Lewis.
What pressure for a CEO? You've got 8 seconds to perform before the stockholder says, I have no faith anymore.
It started with a volume. I mean, it could be institutional.
but a 6% drop, its largest drop in 3 months. Unusual rise in volume. Often the case that that's either program trading. Or
wonder how smart they are. If one computer says sell when it gets to this price, another one says sell when this guy sells, another one said if the price goes down by this much, sell, and then all the other computer algorithms just start triggering one after the other like a domino.
Well, that's right. And it wasn't just Apple. In fact, there were about 300 stocks that had this kind of volatile, odd price volatility. Something you see a lot now. But mm-hmm. Apple, in fact, Michael Lewis in his book, which is wonderful, highly recommended, Flash Boys. Is it Flash Boys? That talks about Apple particularly as an example. It's the kind of stock that is perfect for high-frequency trading. Flash Boys is such a good book on this. Anyway, nothing to worry about, nothing to fear here. It's coming back up, and that's not really anything anybody who's investing in Apple or wondering how Apple's going to do should take anything from. Just thought I'd mention that. Let's talk about the lawsuit. Last I heard this morning, they needed a new plaintiff.
Yes.
All right. So the lawsuit, which has been going on now for 10 years, right? Something like that. It's referring to iPods sold in a time frame from 2006 to 2008. And there seem to be two complaints, or at least I've read two different stories about this. The Wall Street Journal said one of the complaints was, and we've all experienced this, when you put an iPod in a new computer, it says, well, this iPod is associated with iTunes from another computer. You can copy music over, but I'm going to erase everything that's on it right now. The other complaint is that you couldn't install music from other music stores on it because that Apple only supported one form of copy protection, its own Fair Play, Fair Play.
Yeah, Fair Play.
Play Fair is the crack.
Plays for sure was the Microsoft one.
Right. Well, that's exactly it. You couldn't buy something at the Microsoft store Napster or Rhapsody or anywhere else that had its own DRM because it wasn't supported on the iPod.
Real Media Who?
Well, Real was, Who?
That was, that was never actually true, though. I mean, it's given that we're only talking about syncing directly from iTunes. It's interesting how difficult it is to explain Apple to the courts because they are a company. They will do things that are definitely in their best interest. They might even see advantages to keeping things locked up, not just to keep the thing secure, but to, again, prevent certain inconvenient competition from happening. But it's so important. There's no legal basis to explain to the courts, look, our corporate attitude is that we need to maintain control over all the devices we sell. We need to maintain control over all the software we sell. There is an advantage to the consumers to doing this, but that is simply our way. That's how we think of what our responsibility is and what our rights are as creators of stuff, is that we want to maintain control of this at all times. We want the ability to make sure that nothing is happening on here that we don't approve of and that we don't think is good, is healthy for the device or for the user. But when you take that outside of Cupertino, it really does seem like we don't want any competition whatsoever. And again, while I don't doubt that Apple is going to behave as a company that wants to protect its best interests, a lot of this really is motivated by a simple desire for control.
So the suit, which was started in 2005, I don't even remember 2005, continues on even though they keep losing plaintiffs. So you need – okay, so it's a class action lawsuit, but you need actually one real person with this problem. Yeah. And they've disqualified – one of them withdrew last week. They disqualified the other saying, well, she did not buy an iPod in that time period. She didn't have her receipt. She was in court. So she said, but I have the iPod right here. So the Apple said, well, can we see that? They wrote down the serial number. Then they did a little research and said, nope, you bought that after the time period of this lawsuit. So then she went back. She said, well, no, and filed an affidavit. I bought two on September 8th, 2008. And then they said, well, you bought it with a credit card from your husband's law firm. So you didn't buy it. Anyway, but this one person represents a class of 8 million. They're seeking $350 million, although there could be additional punitive damages. The judge declined to throw it out yesterday. Judge Yvonne Gonzalez-Rogers is holding a hearing today. This is a jury case, so she's shunted the jury out. and is now holding a hearing hoping to find somebody else. She says it's too big. We can't just throw this out. We got to give the council a chance to find more people. And, in fact, the plaintiff's counsel says, oh, we got lots of people who over the weekend said, yeah, I'll join this.
You think they would have found this earlier on in the process, though?
Well, that's what the judge said. You didn't really do your job.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I can't punish those 8 million iPod buyers because you guys are doofuses. Although you have to, I think in a case like this, it's the law firm that's bringing this because they're mm-hmm. going to get, you know, 60% of the proceeds. This is, you know, it's a very lucrative little business. The sad thing to me is they managed in this whole thing to get on Steve Jobs, literally on his deathbed, just months before he passed away in 2011, to record a videotape deposition. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. The last thing I'm sure Steve wanted to do. And in which he says, we haven't seen it yet, although it may be released, which I think would be, I don't know, maybe it'd be too morbid. I think there'd be people interested in seeing it. But he said, look, we didn't have a choice. The record companies say that we have to do this. He said every time the DRM is cracked, literally a clock starts ticking and we have a few days to fix it and release the fix. The threat the record companies hold over our heads is that they will pull the music from the iTunes store and literally put the iTunes store out of business. Mm-hmm. He said this was the deal we made with the record companies. The record companies said the iPod is a massive piracy device, and if you don't somehow prohibit people from taking the iPod over to their friend's house and saying, here, have 160 gigs of music, then we're not going to sell stuff in the iTunes store.
They're doing that today. If you change your iTunes match login, you know, you can't change it again for 90 days because they don't want you to go to someone else's house, put in their login, download all their music, then go to someone else's place, put in their login. It's, not everything has changed.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, but to be fair, that certainly addresses the issue of locking up anything that could be termed a security problem with the device. The idea of being able to load music into the device from a competing music service, however, is not the same thing as getting music off of it. But if he was speaking of wording in the contract that simply said if there's a security problem and we can define security problem however we want, yeah, then that definitely falls under that. This is why whenever we really, not just with Apple, but with any other company, when we look at why is this company doing something that's so bizarre or something that seems so stupid, you don't know if there's some sort of legal requirement for them to do that. I myself might have dinged early versions of Android for, gosh, what a weird behavior, what a non-intuitive way to scroll. And then through that lawsuit, funnily enough, we find out that, no, there was an agreement, there was patent problems with doing things in the most natural and obvious way possible. So they had to do something in the third or fourth best way simply to avoid legal issues. So it's anytime that we're talking about this sort of stuff, we have to avoid phrases like, oh, man, these people, they just don't get it. Apple just doesn't get it. You know, they're going to be buried because they just don't want to innovate. They don't want to change. Like, no, if there's a lot, you know, if you were inside of Apple, you probably also would not understand the real reasons why they have to do things, because sometimes it's three or four or five layers deep.
It's interesting, too, because Apple did support other music stores as long as it was DRM free. When Amazon started up with their DRM music that was, you know, DRM free music that was even cheaper, 89 cents, that easily went on the iPod. You just dragged it into iTunes, dragged it on. But to expect Apple to support Plays For Sure, which had, you know, historically had tremendous problems, including shutting down and basically making people
It didn't work on the Zune reliably. That was made by Microsoft.
Right.
Yeah, so to have to support that, and then you have to support Reels DRM, and how many, what size companies DRM do you have to support? Isn't it fair if you support some and not others? These are all just, and it's non-trivial to what that does to your software stack. Supporting your own stuff is easy, but when you have to support everyone else's stuff, it doesn't seem like a reasonable sort of thing.
I think it was Eddie who testified in the case that supporting multiple DRMs on the same device would be like making a car with two or three steering wheels. It would not be.
Well, and you're subject to them. I mean, if Microsoft's Plays For Sure gets broken, cracked, is it Apple's responsibility? Now the iPod is again a piracy machine. What does that do with their relationships with music company?
Do you think Jobs and Apple wanted DRM to go away, but this was a deal that they had to do with the devil?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think Jobs even said that, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. That's the story they've been telling pretty much from the beginning, that if they could have talked the record companies into launching without DRM, that's what they would have done. They felt as though that was a price of getting this thing launched. And I think that even they knew that DRM was not going to last more than a year or two. I'd like to it's kind of ironic that one of the reasons why the Amazon MP3 store got such a toehold was because the iTunes store was becoming such a monster hit, and it was basically becoming, for lack of a better word, the iTunes of digital music. And the only way that music companies could sort of claim back some of their power and not put all of their eggs in the iTunes basket was to not only help out Amazon and do deals with them, but also give them something that the iTunes store did not have at that point, which was DRM-free music downloads. And then that had to spread everything else.
Does the iPod still do that thing where if you have linked it to one iTunes and then you connect it to another computer, does it still say, I'm going to erase your data?
For video, so it depends on what it is. For anything that is still with FairPlay DRM, which includes music, which includes movies, TV shows, and apps and games, you can have five computers linked to it or up to 10 devices, and then it will ask you to deregister.
So you don't have that same issue, though, which really was kind of horrible. And I have many people call and say, oh, I accidentally said yes, and now I lost all my music. I've done that, but that's not the case anymore. You have up to five, and it'll just say, hey, you've reached your limit of five.
Yeah, before you get to five, it'll let you unselect some of the devices or unregister some of the devices. When you get to five, it'll let you unregister all of them and then re-register the ones that you want. And the 10 devices include Apple TVs and iPhones and iPads on top of those computers.
Certainly, DRM is always a bad idea. I don't think anybody at this point thinks it's a good idea, except the people who are using it. And it's pretty really clear to me that DRM doesn't slow down pirates in any way. It only inhibits honest users. It only gets in the way of normal people.
Steve Jobs' thoughts on music letter that he wrote so famously and put it up. And it's true to this day. I have a 7.1 receiver sitting here that I can't use because no matter what I hook up to it, it gives me HDCP content errors. So it just blocks it saying it's illegal content, whether I buy it on iTunes, play it on a PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
And that perfectly works, except for the HDCP chip.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, coincidentally, like, this is the perfect place for, like, this to come up, because when I'm not using this computer for podcasting, I'm using it to rip DVDs, rip Blu-rays, and I bought a whole bunch, like, off of Amazon sales and stuff like that. It does not even occur to me to purchase movies from digital movies through the iTunes store or the Amazon video store, because I would much rather buy this and break the DRM and then be able to put it on my server, be able to put it on my Android phones, put it on my iPads, and have that much control over it than buy DRM content. So it's absolutely true. I mean, it encourages me to I buy these things legitimately and then break the DRM, but breaking the DRM is still something that legally is somewhat suspect, but it's, I'd much rather break the DRM through tools that are out there and easy and affordable than deal with everything that the DRM content forces me to go through. It's just not useful.
When you go to Apple TV and you buy a movie or you rent a movie and you press the button, it puts up that authorizing label, and that just makes me feel like a criminal. I just hate that word so much.
And also when it breaks, you feel like you've been cheated a little bit. I had, fortunately, the George Takei documentary was good enough that I would want to watch it twice. But you know, I rented it on the desktop iTunes, and then because I haven't rented movies on iTunes in like years, discovered that I can't. My Apple TV isn't automatically aware that I've rented this movie already, but it will let me rent it a second time through the interface on the Apple TV. I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll go ahead. I'll spend another $3.
Yeah.
And there's a story like that for pretty much every user who has to deal with DRM content. I have paid for this. You should be allowing me to watch this, but now you're simply, through a failure of the software that manages this system, I am not getting access to what I've paid for. And that, once again, sends you towards, or I could simply do something that the industry does not want me to do, which is to produce a digital copy that I can then have fun with however I want.
What do you use, just out of curiosity, to back up? I'm sorry, no quotes. To back up your Blu-ray discs?
There is a really useful utility called Make MKV, which gets rid of the copy protection on the Blu-ray, and then if all by itself, you can use it to spit out backup files of all the data that's on the Blu-ray. But then you hook that up to Handbrake, and Handbrake will then once you have used this tool to essentially act as the go-between between the operating system and the disk. You can then go to Handbrake, and then it will just be able to rip all those files directly.
Even Blu-rays?
Even Blu-rays. It's a 2 or 3 step process if you do it the easiest way, meaning that you use MakeMKV to spit out the files onto your hard disk, and then Handbrake converts those files into something useful. However, there is some command line mojo you can do that will let Handbrake see the libraries that MakeMKV has. So it really does become put it in the Blu-ray drive, let MakeMKV chew on it for half a minute, and then once it's done chewing on it, Handbrake can then rip it directly from the Blu-ray drive. You do have to make sure you have a drive that's compatible with MakeMKV. Most of them are, most of those are. I have this cheap $30 drive, no name OEM drive that I got off of Amazon for again like $35, and it's just easy as pie. It works easily. I use Handbrake to create two different copies of it, one at full HD resolution and then another one that's at like lower resolution that's more portable for phones and for tablets and stuff like that. And so the high definition, the super high def version goes onto my media server and plays through my Roku, plays through everything else. And then the other one just goes onto a file server. And so I can just sync it directly onto literally everything that I own. And that's the reason why I do that.
If you go to github.com/Don Melton, he's made some amazing scripts to automate a lot of this stuff. And he's the kind of guy who will make sure that the blacks in Saving Private Ryan are rendered as black as possible.
Yeah, that's the video file solution. It's not terribly easy, but he has scripts for like, here's a script that manages the settings to create a digital copy that is similar to what Apple or Amazon or whatever would create for commercial streaming. And so I don't use it only because I really want this to be like putting a slice of toast in a toaster and getting toast 4 minutes later. And so I just like, you know, I'll go to most of these are went to my usual comic book store that had like just bins and bins of really good DVDs for like $5. And so I tend to like just have a stack of like a dozen of these going at any one time. And
you also don't re-rip all of them all 300 of them every 2 days like he does. So it's a different use case.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I encourage people to do that because it's simple, it's cheap, and the limitations of DRM being locked into only playing stuff on Apple or Amazon compatible devices is just intolerable. I watch movies and enjoy movies so much more by virtue of the fact that it is simply a file on a server that any device on my network that can access a file on a server can either stream directly or simply copy, and then I can take it out of the house. Why would you want something less than that?
That's the second complaint about DRM is that it encourages you, everybody to do what we just did, which is teach everybody how to be a pirate.
Exactly.
Because quite reasonably wish to have an unencumbered copy of a movie you purchased. I mean, I'm not advocating this.
I just want to be able to watch it, Leo.
I want to watch it.
I just feel like there's a legal component and there's an ethical component. I am absolutely not ethically troubled whatsoever with buying a copy of Raiders of the Lost Ark, converting it to a file, never letting other people have that file, but allowing, you know, I have no ethical problems with that whatsoever. I don't think anybody else should. Nor do I.
I bought a ton of Blu-rays that don't play now just because one of the Blu-ray players I had scratched them all. Oh. It was one of the TV series. I didn't realize till later. I just took one of them out, put the next one in. I can't play any of them. I think it was The West Wing or something. I can't play any of them anymore. I went and rebought all of them.
You should have the right. And I think you do have. Absolutely. Well, certainly in Canada you have the right. And I think even in the United States you have the right to make archival backups of your digital media.
I'm
no lawyer and I don't even care because, as you say, Andy, it's just right that you should be able to do that.
Yep.
We're going to take a break. Coming back, if you've been worried about the long-term viability of solid-state drives, there's some very good news for you. And Mark Zuckerberg says Apple is ridiculous.
Ridiculously profitable, am I right, shareholders?
We'll talk about that in just a little bit. Our show today brought to you by Oscar. Hi, Oscar. Oscar, if you live in New York or New Jersey, although I'm told that they are. This is a pilot program that they plan to roll out in a lot larger area. If you're looking for health insurance, this is kind of the internet's answer to health insurance. They focus on everyday people as their customers, not big companies. They're using technology to make health insurance simpler, more intuitive, and more human. These are engineers, people who worked at Tumblr, Spotify, and Google. They're really trying to make a better way to buy and use health insurance. For instance, as part of their app, they have a personal timeline that lets you track your medical history, including doctor appointments, visit notes, prescriptions. Telemedicine is supported by Oscar. Phone calls with a doctor. It also helps you find doctors and care in your area. Man, I wish they had it out here. Search by location, languages spoken, hospital affiliation. iOS version is out now. Android's coming out next month. Oscar is using technology to provide better care to individuals and their families and to make quality care more accessible. If you're lucky enough to be living in New Jersey or New York, Oscar's Doctor on Call gives you access to a board-certified doctor 24/7. It's like having a doctor in the family. But you got to be in New York and New Jersey right now. And if you do, please let me know what your experience is. Learn more about Oscar's health insurance and get a quote at hioscar.com/MacBreak, hioscar.com/MacBreak, or call 844-OSCAR-13, 1-844-OSCAR-13, OSCAR. You can sign up by the 15th of the month. What is the date today? You got 7 days, 6 days. And be insured by the first of the following month. Hi, Oscar. Hi, Oscar.com/MacBreak. It's about time we got some of the geeks trying to solve this, doing it right with an app and everything. Hi, Oscar.com/MacBreak or 1-844-Oscar-13. Here's some very exciting news. Let me see if I can find it because I just erased it. If you've ever bought an SSD, and nowadays when you buy a new MacBook, you're buying an SSD. No, I don't want to update the Adobe Flash Player. Go away. I said no, and it still downloaded it. That's annoying. I must have gone to a pirate site. This is the Tech Report doing this. They, more than a year ago, get this, they picked 6 solid-state drives for, they say, a suicide mission. We were curious how many writes could survive before burning out. Really, that's what something a lot of people have been worried about is if you have an SSD, is it going to be less long-lived than a spinning hard drive? We also wanted to track how each one's performance characteristics and health statistics change as the writes accumulate. And somewhat morbidly, we wanted to watch what happened when the drives finally expired. So far, the Corsair Neutron GTX, the Intel 335, the Kingston HyperX, and the Samsung 840 all have died. However, each went far farther than their official spec. So that's the good news. All went longer than the spec. In fact, went much longer than you'd probably have any occasion to use them for. The last victim fell at 1.2 petabytes of writes. But now they've got two still alive. The 840 Pro and a HyperX 3K have reached 2 petabytes of writes. Now, that it's kind of hard to put that in perspective, but the author says to give you an idea, the solid-state drives in my main desktop over several years have logged less than 2 terabytes. So we're talking 1,000 times more. He says at this rate, it'll take me 1,000 years to reach two petabytes. So this is really good news. This is writes only, but reads are non-destructive right on SSDs. This is writes only. So very good news if you've been a little bit worried. I know we get I still get calls. I want the speed of SSDs. I love the idea there's no moving parts, the lower power, but how long are they going to last? Very, very long time.
Yeah.
And because there's no spinning parts, I think you could now say pretty conclusively longer than a spinning drive.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. I was doing some maintenance. I was traveling over the weekend. And I need to free up some. I had an experience that showed both the advantages and the disadvantages of SSD. Because stupidly, when I bought my new MacBook last year, I didn't think I'd be using it as much as I am, and so I didn't just totally max out the internal drive. So it only has a 256 gigabyte SSD, which means that it's always running out of space. So I had to like copy like lots and lots and lots of files off of it onto what I now use as my travel pocket drive, which is an external SSD. And so that's the bad news. The good news is that copies are happening so fast that I'm pretty sure that the Finder is buggy. You know, where I got here's a 500 megabyte video file or a 300 megabyte, I'll just drag like 700 megabytes of stuff, and by the time I let go of the pointer, it's done. And I actually have to open it. I'm serious. It's like I'm not thinking that there's a pause and that's done. I mean that I let go and I don't even see a progress bar, and I have to like double click on the external drive to make sure the file is actually there. So this is and you're right. There's a lot of fear about longevity of SSDs. A lot of times when you look online for this information, you find that you're talking about deep, deep, deep analysis that's intended for people who are buying SSDs for server use and really, really intense server use, as opposed to consumers for which really they're almost they all work incredibly well. They any name brand SSD is going to be so long lived that you will. The heat death of the universe will come before the end of your life, before the end of the device. So just buy it and enjoy it.
Jeff Gassier is writing this. The Tech Report is at techreport.com. And there's a lot more detail about error handling and so forth. And so it's a good read. And I have to say our SSD expert from PC Perspective, Alan Malventano, has been telling me that the new Samsung EVO 850 Pro is the one to watch. This is the first SSD drive to use a new kind of NAND technology called VNAND. He is very bullish on this. And the prices have really plummeted. From Samsung, yeah. 128 gigs is $119. So we're now below $1 a gigabyte. 256 gigs, $189. They have a terabyte version of the EVO 850 Pro for $659. And I think that is a very exciting price. So, and Alan says this is the drive he's currently recommending is the 850. It also solves some of the trim issues that the 840 had, some of the slowdown issues. So this is the drive to get. I don't think is it available now? It's imminently available on this new technology. Pretty impressive. Good news. Good news. The hard drive folks have always blown me away.
Solid state future, Leo.
We're all going to live in a solid state world.
No more tube storage or magnetic cores for us.
No.
You're in the push button atomic jet age.
Next time you're at the brick house, I have hanging on the wall a big thing of core memory.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And it's not very much, but I mean, it's huge. I mean, it might be 2K. Because they're actually little magnetic cores with wires going this way and this way.
I remember the trays of punch cards my dad had at
something
IBM
like
when I was a
this,
kid.
Yo?
You have some. Oh, there you go.
Nice.
Some core memory, baby.
Yep.
I
always have to like. I always like to have about 1K of backup storage in case.
Make that a medallion, and you just wear that around like a giant clock
around your neck. Yeah, I love it.
Core memory, baby.
Actually, I'm so this is more like bytes than K, but
we live in amazing, amazing times, and it's so easy to take it for granted. Like Louis C.K.
You could probably read the binary off that thing.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, it's probably still good, especially since I keep it in such an impressive archival storage.
It's in the grippers.
But yeah, like I was buying stuff online over the past week, and like 64 gigabyte memory cards kept going on sale for like incredibly low amounts of money, and I realized that now SD cards storage is so cheap now that I don't even bother to delete anything off of a camera card. I buy 32 or 64 gig cards. When they're full, I simply label them and put them in a box, and those like act as like the fourth backup and like the absolutely untouched, unedited, every crappy photo, even the ones that I took accidentally, is always there. That's how cheap these things are. And you think about how difficult it was to get 16K back in the day.
I was watching last night. I was playing with a new Music Key YouTube ability to play videos without ads, you know, and stuff. And I was Chromecasting it to my big screen TV. And I was kind of in the mood. We started watching Michael Jackson videos. I'm watching the Thriller video, 1983. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I remember what a big deal that was. And then I was just reading an article about Nintendo. 1983 was when Nintendo came out with its first game machine, the NES. We have come a long way since 1983, you know.
Leo, but I have an explanation for you that will depress the hell out of you. Uh-oh. If you're ready for it.
Yeah.
1983 was three decades ago.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, my God. That can't be.
That's why I was thinking so much has happened, because it's happened over 30 years, Leo. When I was in school, men, you know, Casablanca was only like, what, 5 years
mm-hmm,
old?
The world's moving. I went to see last Friday, Stevie Wonder perform the entire Songs in the Key of Life. Now, almost 40 years old, that album. But that album has not aged. It is... What a phenomenal concert that was. Best concert I've seen in years. Mark Zuckerberg. Okay, so this is good. So the new... Okay, the battle used to be Steve Jobs, Eric Schmidt. Apple, Google, right? They're still... Now Apple's kind of buried the hatchet, and not in Google's back, but just in the ground. Saying, yeah, you know, no more lawsuits, blah, blah, blah. However, there seems to be a brewing rivalry between Apple and Facebook. Remember... In September, when Tim Cook was talking about the new iPhones, he said, quote, a few years ago, users of Internet services began to realize that when an online service is free, you're not the customer, you're the product. You know, that's an old saw. And of course, promoting Apple's commitment to privacy. Our product is our hardware. We make money on that. We don't need to make money on you. Which I think is a pretty fair statement. Zuckerberg says, that's ridiculous, and Apple's products are overpriced. Recent interview with Time magazine, he says, Apple is actually making, and this isn't wrong either, Apple is making products that are exclusionary because they're overpriced.
Facebook's making products that are exclusionary if you don't want to share your data.
It's free as long as you don't mind sharing your data.
You can pay with money, with time, with data, or with attention. And money is really easy to see. The rest are more abstract. But if I choose not to share data, then Facebook is exclusionary to me. The same way if I choose not to share money, Apple is exclusionary to me.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's why I don't even like claims that, oh, well, you realize that we don't care about selling your data. We only want we want to support you as a consumer and have you buy our next wave of products. And that's true as far as it goes, but If you wanted to turn that around and say things about Apple the way that Apple is saying things about the company, you could say, you see, here at Google, here at Facebook, we don't try to lock you into one platform to make it really hard for you not to pay us for another high markup piece of hardware. If you want to come in with a $200 Walmart laptop, that's fine. If you want to come in with a $4,000 gaming laptop, that's fine too. We give you the choice. We realize there are people at all different price levels. And I mean, that's not intended as a complaint against Apple, but as, okay, there's a factual point to be made there, but let's also realize that you're only looking at 10% of the picture there.
But to be
there's always ways to spin things.
To be fair to Mark, this is an interview by Lev Grossman in Time magazine in which they're talking to Mark in India about bringing the internet via internet.org to the developing nations and talking about poverty and how these people are absolutely not going to be buying iPhones. They're not going to be buying iMacs. And I think you could praise Mark for saying, well, maybe we can get them something, and Google with Loon and so forth. Maybe we can get some internet access to them. And yes, we're going to make money off of it because we're going to wire the world and there'll be e-commerce opportunities and advertising opportunities. But Apple doesn't have a strategy for getting iPhones into developing nations.
Yeah, it's not their business. I mean, their business is the higher end premium market. Right. They've chosen not to really compete in that market. But just to the other point, I mean, if I use Facebook, it's not trivial to take all my stuff and move it to Google if I suddenly have an objection to Facebook. Everybody, that's why Mark Zuckerberg wants to wire the world, because he wants to do it before Google does. So everyone's invested in Facebook, and it's hard to move to Google from there. Right. So, you know, it always is about using my products. The analogy I like to use, and it's a horrible analogy, is that if I'm having dinner, like if I go out to eat with Andy, you know, we pay for our dinners. That's one thing. It does cost me money, but I've paid for my dinner and we can both leave. If the restaurant gives us a lobster dinner and we're eating it and they don't charge us for it, but then just sit there leering at us, maybe that's fine for me, but maybe it's not. It all depends on what sort of barter, because you're bartering, again, money, time, data.
Here's the analogy I would use that speaks to what my situation. In fact, Mike Elgin was the one who suggested this to me. He said, you know, there are two kinds of media. There's media behind a paywall, like the Wall Street Journal. You have to give them money to read their content. And there's ad-supported media like Twit. And Mike was the one who said, you know, Twit is fundamentally more democratic because anybody can listen to Twit anywhere if you can get it, if you have a device you could play it on, because there's no paywall. So it's fundamentally more democratic. I like the Twit model better. I don't want to be behind a paywall for a lot of reasons, not altruistic particularly, but I just don't. But and I think it's completely reasonable to do as Jessica Lesson has done with the information, to put it, to have a paywall. They're just two different business models. I don't think they're antagonistic necessarily. They might even be complementary.
It's nice to have choice.
It's good to have choice. Andy, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, no, I was just going to pick up on some stuff that Renee was saying. I mean, there's the point being that every company acts to the own best interest of their business model, and every business model is going to be different. It's like saying that here at McDonald's, we don't try to trick you into buying undercoating and special wire rims and air conditioning that you can only get if you buy the Rally Sport package. We just want to sell you a hamburger for 99 cents. Like, well, okay, big sacrifice. You're not in the business of selling cars. This isn't an ethics, you know, thing that you're talking about. You're talking about you and this, your company and this company are in different businesses. Just like, you know, Ford is going to say, we really aren't interested in tricking you into putting more processed sugar into your kid's mouth than is healthy for you. We just want to get your kids to school safely. I don't know why McDonald's doesn't care about you getting your kids to school safely.
Now, Zuck said, this actually is a great couple of paragraphs I'll read from the from Lev Grossman's article in Time magazine. Lev writes, there's something distasteful about the whole business. A global campaign by a bunch of Silicon Valley jillionaires to convert literally everybody into data consumers, to make sure no eyeballs anywhere go unexposed to their ads. Everyone must be integrated into the vast cultural homogeneity that is the internet. It's like a zombie plague. World War Z for Zuckerberg.
Get him before Alibaba does.
After all, it's not as though anybody asks two-thirds of humanity whether they wanted to be put online. I bet they do. It makes one want to say there are still people here on God's green earth who can conduct their social lives without being marketed to. Can't we leave them alone? I aired this point of view to a few Facebook executives. Predictably, I didn't get a lot of traction. Zuck's response was, internet.org is not about growing Facebook for the simple reason there's no money in showing ads to the people that use the app because they don't have any. That's a legitimate point.
Sure, but I mean, those are growing economies, and if you and we've seen by private experience that if you get them to see Mickey Mouse and Superman and the Playboy Bunny and whatever brand that you're giving them, it creates affinity for those brands.
Yeah,
and then when they do have money, absolutely.
Yeah. Because really, one way to make money, M-Pesa, which is basically banking for much of undeveloped Africa. They use their dumb phones, feature phones to exchange money, to store money, and that's a big business. A lot of money be made there in lots of small transactions.
Yeah. And they want them to use Facebook messaging the way they use BBM because it's super cheap and voice is expensive there.
And because eventually commerce can flow over it.
Yeah.
Well, look at Line. They buy stickers and they promote games now. It's not just a messaging service anymore. Right. Yeah. Sorry, Andy.
That's why my eyes glaze over when I hear that. Oh, you remember that if you get something for free, you're the product. I think it's overplayed. It really is the tech commentary. Yeah. But also it indicates it sort of implies that consumers are stupid and that they are being exploited, as opposed to simply saying that I'm okay with this transaction depending on the services that I'm getting and how much they value. I value them in my lives. I mean, if a school system wants to standardize on Google Docs as opposed to, that works out really, really well for Google, so long as it's also the best situation for school systems, that's an okay trade.
Yeah. A few months after Zuckerberg announced internet.org, Bill Gates appeared to take a contrarian line in an interview with the Financial Times. Quote, which is more important, connectivity or malaria vaccine, Gates said. If you think connectivity is the key thing, that's great. I don't. And more succinctly, as a priority, it's a joke. But Zuck said, you know what? I called Bill. Wait a minute. This is the quote from Zuck. I called him up and I was like, what's up, dude? But that's the quote. But he was misquoted, says Zuck. He even corrected it afterwards. He was like, no, I fully believe this is critical.
Like, for sure.
Like, for sure, man. it's not that it's not critical. If you had a choice, then if you had to choose, but it's a false choice between connectivity and malaria vaccine, you'd probably choose malaria vaccine, but that's a false choice. It's not the choice.
I do think, though, that there's a difference in how traditionally we value. Like, when you pay something with money, there are people who live beyond their means, but money is a very tangible thing that you can see in front of you, where, at least speaking for myself, data and attention is something that I can mortgage very easily in the present at the expense of my future. And I think it is worthwhile reminding people that no matter what you're buying, no matter whose model you're supporting, you are paying in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Zuck says, our mission is to connect every person in the world. You don't do that by having a service people pay for. Not money.
Well, I'm just glad that there are all kinds of different people pursuing all kinds of different solutions. And like the people that might be saying that, well, people need, you could say not only do certain areas need malaria vaccines, they also need roads. They also need clean water.
We need a lot of stuff. It's not a zero sum game.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm glad that there are also people who imagine helping lower income families and saying that, well, we're not going to make it possible for you to take if you're taking time to take your kids to see a movie or to even see like a free program at the library, that's time you could be spending making money to help feed your children. So we're not going to let you do that. There's so much that goes into creating a good, healthy life, and connectivity is one of those things. I would be disappointed if there was X dollars total worth of time, money, and attention that people could give to helping other people, and they only put it into Facebook or into online services. But I would also that's never the situation. There's going to be individual A who wants to put 100% of their attention into solving one problem. Individual B who will be someplace else. Individual C who will do someplace else. Once everybody does one thing that they're passionate about to solve one specific problem, that's how the whole picture gets clearer.
And I recommend you read the article in Time. It's online, it's free, no paywall. But here's the quote you don't see in all the coverage of this article, where the quote you see from Zuckerberg is ridiculous. Here's a good quote. A frustration, Mark says, a frustration I have is that a lot of people increasingly seem to equate an advertising business model with somehow being out of alignment with your customers. I think that's the most ridiculous concept. What? You think because you're paying Apple that you're somehow in alignment with Apple? If you were in alignment with them, they would make their products a lot cheaper. I think Mark is a smart guy. I think this is an interesting argument. I don't think either side is right, but I agree with you. This is a great thing to have the choice. And I think it's important to make the choice explicit and understand what's going on. This is a good article to read. It was in the December 15th Time magazine, and it is available online on their website.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like Facebook myself. I mean, I actively try not to use it as much as I can, but you cannot deny that for a lot of people, this is a great solution to a very important problem, and it keeps a lot of families together that would not be communicating in any other way, shape, or form.
Hugely valuable. Hugely valuable.
I'm the same way as Andy in that we still have accounts, probably says just how deeply woven Facebook is into the fabric of the internet.
I could get rid of my account. Nobody I really care about is on Facebook. Yeah. None of my family members.
It's fun. I was at Thanksgiving dinner with like my extended family, and what did you think about your nephew's latest achievement? I'm like, what latest achievement?
Oh, well, it was on Facebook.
Like they graduated from high school 3 years early and got a Rhodes Fellowship. I put it on Facebook 3 months. Oh, that's why.
But they can say that, but the problem with Facebook is there's no guarantee you saw that post, even if you looked at Facebook assiduously, because it doesn't show everything. I'm not a Facebook fan either, believe me, and I'm not. But as you said so eloquently, Andy, so many people do get value out of it. I wouldn't ever say, well, you should.
We had that same problem, and Serenity did a video for us yesterday showing how to make a list, and that way it avoids, because Facebook will only show you certain items, but if you put them in a list, it turns out they'll show you everything from the people or pages that you put in there.
Right. You can also be chronological if you care, but you'll see. Yeah. I mean, there's ways to get around it. But most people, I'm sure, just do the algorithm, right?
Yeah. Which is
horrible. Facebook choose what you see. Tim Cook, on an unrelated story, maybe Time's 2014 Person of the Year. At least he's on the short list. I think I'd put him on, especially after he came out. I think that might have put him over the top. Other choices, of course, you see there Jack Ma, the CEO of Alibaba, Vladimir Putin, who is in charge at Russia. Russia. Taylor Swift, who has very red lipstick. Ebola could be the person of the year. The Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, I think he's a long shot. I would say Tim Cook, if that's the competition, Tim Cook should be in there. The first openly gay CEO of a Fortune 500. He has done so much for Apple. Apple's success since Tim Cook has been CEO is incredible. Made it the most valuable company in the world. A lot to be said for that. Putin, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe Putin.
Putin.
Remember, person of the year does not have to be a good person. It's just
exactly.
Influential.
It is right, exactly. Influential and notable. The personal computer was a person of the year 1 year. Right. So
Zuck was the person of the year in 2010.
Yes.
He's so far the only tech CEO to receive the award since Bezos won it in 1999.
Yeah. It's interesting that I don't know where this copy came from. It's on the Time site. But I don't know if it's the same people who are evaluating this or the same people who wrote this piece for Time. But it's interesting that it's Tim. First openly gay Fortune 500 CEO was last after he introduced the 6 and the 6 Plus and the Apple Watch and Apple Pay.
This is the text and this is the list from Time. Tim Cook, who introduced Apple's iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, Apple Watch and Apple Pay this year, and whose decision to come out made him the first openly gay Fortune 500 CEO. Yep. You think that order is backwards?
Yes. Well, definitely, because he's a seller of really good gadgets, which is not a terrible thing to do. But when you talk about what makes someone notable, it's more than making a very important phone. It really is the idea that you have. I think it was in Chris Rock's interview a couple weeks ago.
That
actually made the perfect comment that it is really. We kind of shrug when like a teenager or someone in their 20s is a celebrity or well known comes out as being gay because what's the big deal? But Tim Cook, somebody in his age group, in the group of CEOs. Of super, super, super wealthy, super, super powerful people saying that I am not in the entertainment industry. I'm a corporate titan and I am gay. Go ahead. Go ahead and make any complaints, have any backlash, what you want. When his peer group has to deal with an openly gay person, that's an incredibly important thing. That's not and that's really something that even I hadn't considered when he came out. So I think that that's the significant thing. It would be I spoke backwards a minute ago. I meant that it will be interesting if he is chosen. How they intend to write about his selection, about whether they talk about his success as the CEO of a very important tech company, or whether they talk about his leadership as a person of power, able to do a great amount of good with that amount of power that he wields, that goes beyond selling more gadgets. Going beyond even coming out as a gay person, as a gay man, also saying responsibility that he has, whatever he has personally for Apple, being a little bit more open about charitable causes, being a little bit more being a little bit more aggressive about matching donations of his employees, and trying to make sure that Apple is a company that does things that its customers would definitely approve of. I'm an Amazon customer. They have great deals. It's really, really convenient. There are things that I don't even consider buying at a store because it's just so much easier to buy this cable at Amazon and get it for $4 and it arrives in 2 days instead of driving to Radio Shack on a day like this. It bothers me that they don't pay their warehouse employees enough, and it bothers me that they treat their warehouse employees shabbily, and it pleases me when I hear good positive stories about how Apple treats its staff, about how safe all of its employees feel and how proud they feel about the environment that they work in. And so I would hope that if Apple does choose Tim Cook as person of the year, they're not going to say, look at all the money he has made for Apple, and they put the focus more on the reasons why 100 years from now you are still sort of pleased to read about this character. We don't say that, yeah, he built some libraries because he felt really guilty about all the children that he killed in his factories by not caring about anything but production and pricing. Oh, I'm sorry, referring to the steel barons of 100 years ago, not referring to Apple, of course.
Hal in our chat room says the only solution to this, Tim Cook and Vladimir Putin enter the octagon. little wrestling.
Go Auburn.
Illusion there.
I bet that Tim Cook looks better with his shirt off, and I respect the fact that we have to guess how good he looks with his shirt off.
There is a new UFC channel on the Apple TV as of today.
Oh yeah, we'll talk.
I'm not saying that's because of this.
Yeah, but the Octagon. By the way, we'll find out tomorrow. Wednesday is when Time will announce the person of the year. So you'll hear it first on Tech News today, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 1900 UTC on Twitter.tv. They already have made the people's choice. Interestingly, Narendra Modi, the Prime Minister of India, who was a fairly controversial figure before he was elected, won as people's choice. Mm-hmm. Find out tomorrow, and we'll announce
He has a lot of people.
That's like when one of those symphony orchestra votes themselves a Grammy Award. You know, if you're the head of the largest popular, one of the largest popular country, you know, that's almost a gimme.
Yeah.
Like when the BlackBerry Storm won BlackBerry's Best Innovation Award.
Yeah. Going to take a break. Come back. Lots more to talk about. Great cast. As always, it's the regulars, the core group. I guess Lindsay was traveling today, but we've certainly got Renee Ritchie from iMore.com in snowbound Quebec.
I have my gray thing, Leo. I haven't mounted it yet, but I can simulate Alex next time.
Let's see what that looks like. Just simulate that behind you. I don't want to knock all that beautiful stuff you've put up behind you there. I don't know. We were just thinking it's better on the single. I know. The little Renee Ritchie. It's better on the single to have your backdrop. But then on the three shot, the gray is better.
So. I have to say, I bought one of those backdrop rigs that's actually 10 feet wide. I'm going to buy like a large, really large wide backdrop, because when you have a small thing that you have to be right behind, Renee, you kind of look like a talking passport photo. That's all I'm saying. That might not be the effect we're looking for.
I love it. I can't smile.
Our show today brought to you by the folks. And Andy Nacko's here. I didn't say hi, Andy. Andy Nacko's here for the Chicago Sun-Times and his squirrel and his cows staring at the amazing phallic Washington Monument.
That would be, oh, you went there.
I had to.
Disappointed, but you went there.
I had to. Look at it.
Well, the cows.
They seem impressed.
Go there.
They're impressed.
Well, they
we don't know what they're thinking.
I know what I'm the one who's like showing them around. I'm the bovine facilitator during their travels. They share their confidence.
You sure
with me.
She's not saying, you see that bull over there? Our show today brought to you by Squarespace. They just launched Squarespace 7, and it is so gorgeous. Completely redesigned interface, integration with Getty Images. So now you can get your Getty Images for $10 at a time. The new email setup with Google Apps, instant branded email for your small business automatically when you sign up for a Squarespace account. Of course, even more beautiful templates now designed in some cases for specific professions, working with musicians, artists, architects, and chefs. Squarespace has designed category specific templates that'll, you know, support you in your industry. For instance, take a look at the Horizon template, which is laid out for bands. Features tour, special pages like tour dates, a music player built in, merch store, e-commerce built into every single Squarespace template. That's beautiful. They're all mobile responsive. That means they look great on any size screen. Easy to edit now. In fact, you can try this all out at squarespace.com. Click the Get Started button, pick a template, and then you'll see that you can live edit right on the website. No more toggling between the site manager and preview mode. You can even preview designs in a device mode. So on your desktop, you'll see how the site will look on a tablet or a mobile device. They've got an amazing developer platform now out of beta. So if you are a HTML, CSS, JavaScript type, you'll have an incredible platform. The same one as Squarespace uses internally. Speaking of internally, when you ask for support at Squarespace, you're talking to a Squarespace employee right from their offices in New York City 24/7. Plus, there's self-help articles, video workshops. I just You cannot get better than this. Hosting plus software to give you the most amazing experience. Try it free for 2 weeks. That's all you have to do. It's up to you. Nobody's going to force you. Just give it a shot. If you decide to buy, that's when we come in. Use our offer code MacBreak, and you'll get 10% off your new Squarespace site. It is fairly affordable to begin with, $8 a month. That includes the domain name when you sign up for a year and all the apps that they have, the Portfolio app, the Note app, the Metric app, the Blog app, all of which make it so easy to update your site, see how it's doing. The Portfolio is kind of a cool one. That's for, I think, for iPad. If you're a photographer, it lets you show. Oh, they have an iPhone version, too. Lets you show your photos to a prospective client, and it pulls it right from the site, but it doesn't give you the site template. It gives you a unique portfolio template. So cool. Squarespace.com. Squarespace. Start here. Go anywhere. Just use the offer code MacBreak for 10% off. That's all I ask. MacBreak Weekly on the air. Thank you to Jason Howell holding down the fort while I was gone last week.
Anytime, Leo.
Nice job.
You don't take much time off during the week.
It's the first time I have really missed shows very often. By being sick in years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't, in 6 years of tech TV, I never missed a single show.
Food poisoning is horrible because you feel like you want to die, but only for a few hours.
Well, don't get salmonella. It lasts a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a good one. But, you
really
know.
It opens up the sluices of both ends.
Yeah, Bruce. Actually didn't. Mostly it was just really severe cramping and it was just really uncomfortable. You know, I suspect the hotel we stayed at on Thanksgiving night, because next morning we had breakfast there and the server told us the eggs were unusual. And I said, are these fresh? She says, no, they come in a big plastic bag. She say, we go through my body weight in scrambled eggs every breakfast. That's when I think looking back in hindsight.
I've been hit twice on airport food. I've eaten fruit at an airport, and then I've landed like at CES or at WWDC and just been unusable for a couple
days. I really feel like I eat out too much now, you know, and I should start. I'm getting back to cooking in the house because I know how to wash my hands and avoid cross-contamination, wash the knives, wash the cutting boards, all that stuff.
Look at the egg before you cook it.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. That's disgusting. Nobody should hear about that. Jimmy Iovine to Apple. You have a hole in music right now. Let me plug it. Is that the first time Jimmy's used that line? I don't know.
Babylon 5.
That's a lyric in some song somewhere.
Yeah. He's talking about the lack of presence in streaming music. There's Jimmy on the left next to Tim Cook, Dr. Dre, and Eddie Q. The famous picture, the last time either Jimmy or Dre were seen at the Apple campus. I convinced them, says Jimmy, that this Jimmy Iovine, of course, the head of Beats, but also a legend in the music industry, legendary producer and executive. I convinced them, and I don't know how Jimmy talks, but I imagine it's something like this. I convinced them they had to buy this company, I said. I don't want to work for anybody else. I want to do this at Apple. I know I can achieve this at Apple. I don't want to. Maybe he's got a little higher voice. I don't want to shop it. I want to come here to Steve's company. Did nobody tell Jimmy Steve's gone?
Ouch.
I know you guys. I know what you're capable of. I know you get popular culture. I know you have a hole in music right now. Let me plug it. I think it was 2 years before they said, yeah.
So basically, what Apple's looking for in a resume is, I was once one of the dead end kids.
I'm Leo Gorsi. Apparently, Iovine pitched a subscription music service to Apple in 2003, in the earliest years of the iPod, long before Pandora and Spotify. Iovine does not have a specific... This is from an article at Mac Rumors. Julie Clover writing. But I think the interview comes from GQ's magazine, yeah, where he was named one of the men of the year. So he's revealed some of the secrets. Apparently, longtime friend of Steve Jobs, they had a close relationship. He collaborated with Steve on a number of things, including, as we I think knew, the U2 special iPod. He does not have a specific title at Apple, a senior role at the company, alongside Dr. Dre. under Eddie Q. What, anything more to be said about Beats?
Not until Apple says something about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a picture.
It does seem like one of those long haul sort of things.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, I would not have been surprised if Apple had, it surprised me that Apple didn't have any announcements of any kind by the end of this year.
Right.
But that simply means that this is a much bigger plan than just simply they have a product that we want to put our sticker on it and put it out there. It's like, no, it's like they're at a spice market and bought this really cool seeming spice, and they don't know how they're going to use it in their next dish, but they know that their next dish is going to involve this spice somehow.
In a singularly clueless headline in GQ magazine, they write, Jimmy Iovine, the music legend who just might save Apple. What?
He'll save them from the money. He's going to stop the money from falling on top of them.
Might be the other way around. Maybe.
The interesting thing is that Apple didn't announce almost anything to do with iTunes, either at WWDC or during the fall events. We didn't hear continuity for iTunes yet. And you got to figure that's got to be coming. There's the Apple TV stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on there that, to Andy's point, it's not a relabel. It's a rethinking of how they deliver a better unified service, I think.
Yeah.
Also, it's interesting that this is another piece that doesn't really talk about Dre's contributions, which I don't know why that is.
I forgot about Dre's in the studio. Come on.
Well, they forgot about that. Dre. I mean, the thing is, if this were the sort of thing where they had a headphone company, they just wanted a name to put on it, he would have been out of that. He would have been in and out of that company really, really. He might be still in the company if it was really profitable, but would he still be talked about as here's a member of the executive team as opposed to someone who's lending a name to a product?
Is Apple saying that? Does Apple say?
Well, they changed the marketing. It used to say Beats by Dre, and now on Apple's side it says Beats by Dr. Dre. So they're paying attention enough at least to change the product name.
That's a terrible improvement. It's Beats by Dre. Beats by Dr.
To be
that sounds
fair,
like Dean Adele's glasses.
He had not spent years going to doctor school to be called Mr. Leo.
He had not defended his thesis yet. He was only a doctoral candidate but at that time.
Wait a minute. They changed the name from Beats by Dre to Beats by Dr. Dre?
Trent Reznor. I think they reaffirmed his involvement with the Apple project.
That is of interest because Trent, of course, of Nine Inch Nails, has said already that he's very involved. And that makes sense. And boy, Trent is digitally literate. And certainly creative and talented. Dre, the first thing Dre said is, I'm going back in the studio. He's making records.
It just seems puzzling that they would go so far as to say, hi, and let's have him in the group picture. Let's mention him as a part of the executive team as opposed to just somebody who's going to have a parking pass for the lot. So I just worry that, I mean, since there's so much information available of what Iovine has done, and it's so obvious, given his business work, what his relationship with him, I worry that I'm giving short shift to Dre because I simply know nothing about him beyond the fact that his music.
Here's what I think. I think Iovine was streaming. Dre was hardware, was the headphones. And Apple doesn't really care about the hardware. It's the streaming music that's really important to Apple, right?
I just think it's really hard to get office space in the iTunes complex.
Well, they both have offices, don't they?
No.
By the way, I think I got the name right. Jimmy Iovine grew up in Brooklyn. His nickname was Moochie. So I think he did talk like that. I think he was one of the dead end kids. Hey, Moochie.
Yeah, what do you want?
Hey, Moochie. Now, we were, by the way, and I haven't mentioned this on the air, but if you watched Sunday night, if you watched Newsroom on HBO, you would have seen very briefly one of the producers in Newsroom wearing Beats headphones.
And reading Twit.
Oh, wait, you're reading Twit. That's a... Yeah. I buried the lead.
bless you for pointing that out, Renee. that fact had totally been lost.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. He was watching Twit while he was... I think he's a bad guy. He's watching Twit.
Are there bad guys in news?
While he was being a bad guy and wearing Beats headphones. So Beats is still getting out there. I see Beats in movies.
Well, their donut selfie commercial was really good.
The donut selfie commercial. I missed that one.
It was the new Beats commercial. The donut selfie was this woman, I forget her name now, she did a video where it showed you how to take your iPhone from one ear, bring it around to the other ear and use the darkness as a transition to take video selfies of yourself.
Oh,
in different
I did
locations.
See that one.
Yeah, so they did a version of that for Beats with a bunch of different celebrities and the woman who originally created the donut selfie in it. And it was a really good, I think it was most recent Beats ad. It was
yeah, they have a whole whole Tumblr dedicated to the donut selfie. I did see that. Now I know what you're talking about. I was thinking, you see, you said the word donut.
Yeah.
And my mind went to sprinkles.
As well it should.
As well it should. But you're talking about the idea of taking the selfie around. Yeah. Is it a video?
Yeah.
It's like a video
when
selfie?
When you use slow-mo, it's really cool. You can go to donutselfie.com to learn how to do it.
Yeah. You can. This is Donut Selfie.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Sure.
I'm on the tutorial right now. This is brilliant marketing, at least, in this company, right? They know what they're doing. Here, let's listen in. Am I getting more video? I'm getting more audio than...
I think if you go to
donut selfie ad so that we can... Who is this giving us the tutorial
here? Must have redone this because the original woman who created it has her own set of tutorials.
This is Kenan Thompson. I thought Dre had gained some weight, but no, it's Kenan Thompson here.
What's up? This your boy Pimptastic. I'm about to teach y'all how to do the solo selfie. First, you want to turn your camera on.
Okay, good
Make
start.
Make sure it's on video.
Wait a minute. Say that again. Video. Oh, I get it. Video. He's, by the way, using a massive iPhone 6 Plus.
Okay, cool. Then you want to face your screen outwards. Start at the B. Bring it around. Hit that selfie pose. Pimp it. And bring it around to the other B. It's just that simple. If you want to crank up the pimp juice, do it in slow-mo. You dig?
Crank up the pimp juice.
I think the original tutorials are better.
With your donut selfie. And by the way, it's about beats, right? Because he says you start at the beat, you do the selfie, you get to the other beat.
I hope she got well compensated for that because they just took over her entire meme.
So this was not somebody who did it for Beats. This woman was doing it originally just for herself.
Yeah, and then Beats sort
she
of
invented
did
it.
Yeah, well, you'll see her at the very end of this commercial.
Oh, so she's not it. The model in the bikini top.
She's young. I don't know if she's Chinese or not. But
these are real. These are real people. Famous people.
Those are all celebrities. Yeah. People that we're way too old to know. Yeah.
Is that Ashton Kutcher? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You recognize
him? Yeah, that's
her.
That's the woman.
So she invented it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna do more donut selfies.
You should, Leo. You should
what was it? What was the
selfie.
Phrase? I want to bring out the pimp. What was it?
Pimpin'.
Dial up the pimpin'.
Show title.
I'm dialing up the pimping now. The pimp juice.
Dial up the pimp juice.
I'm
dialing
up the pimp juice.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Turn up the pimp juice. Oh, but to do this, you have to have... Oh, you know, they're selling the fact that they don't have wires anymore on the Beats.
But this is close to the equivalent to what the old our iTunes ads were like, you know, sort of the pulse of the community. And,
It is. And I think that is something maybe Apple could use some help with. So that's good. Mm-hmm. Mucci is in residence. Dr. Mucci.
It was a good iPad Air commercial this weekend, too, during the football game.
To the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I was going to say,
Grey
all
Cup.
Your games are Super Bowls to me, Liam. The Grey Cup. The Grey Cup, the Earl Grey tea. Same
should
thing.
Should I play it? Is it an iPad Air ad?
You can go to Apple.com. Sorry, YouTube.com/Apple.
Is this the one called Change? You don't know what the titles of the ads are. No. Change is in the air. Watch the film. No. Where's the ad? So
YouTube.com/Apple. It'll be the first one.
All right. Thank you for helping us find Apple ads. A little. There it is. It is called Change. And this is the Orwells singing. Oh. Yeah, wait a minute. Is it a good idea to put an iPad Air in your gas tank? Oh, it's on top of it. Okay.
That'll be great. That'll work great so long as you only drive that motorcycle indoors. Once you're in the sunlight, that's not a good choice.
I do love. I have to say.
Also
I
don't sand your iPad. That's also
not recommended.
It's thin enough.
I was very pleased to say that at the Stevie Wonder concert, not one person took an iPad video.
God bless them.
So the word is getting out. There are about 8,000 people taking iPhone videos. And a little pro tip here. Turn off the flash on your camera phone when you're taking a picture of a stage 100 feet away. And all you're going to do is illuminate the hair of the people in front of you and annoy everybody behind you. I was sitting behind a woman who did that at least 20 times. I almost tapped her in the shoulder and said, you could turn the flash off. It's not going to do you any good.
Almost tapped her out.
I couldn't believe she didn't even notice. And then there's another really bad trend in public. People are taking, at concerts, flash selfies. So the people in front of me are taking selfies, and the flash is hitting me in the eye. But
you missed out on the obvious solution to get them to make sure get that lady behind you to make sure you turned off the flash so that you'd be completely in darkness. You could have just taken your hand like this and moved a finger and just held it like that for a good 10 minutes. Unless you wanted that to be in the foreground of every picture,
then it will go viral, Andy.
I photobombed a few of those selfies.
Oh, that's even perfect. I would love her to put that file. See what that jerk did when I was just taking flash pictures at a concert with my phone all night? Boy, that guy was a jerk, wasn't he? But back to Beats, though, you reminded me of this really good article. The only involvement I have in football is the AV Club has a column called Block and Tackle, written by John Tatey. Hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. That is just a really readable column on football. This week's column, he's talking about headphones and talks about the controversy because the NFL has a contract with Bose to be the official headphones of the NFL and fining players for wearing any headphones that aren't Bose. But that had the effect of now, because we football players either are proud or because we want to market ourselves as anti-authoritarian, we want to definitely now be wearing not Bose headphones and be seen not wearing Bose headphones. Mm. And he has a great quote from one of these players, Denver safety TJ Ward, saying that Bose headphones are, quote, old people headphones, unquote. And Beats are the ones that everybody wants to have Beats.
That's actually true. And the contract with the NFL requires the players not be seen on camera wearing Beats or any other brand except Bose for 90 minutes before and after the game. Of course, this is well within that time frame. This is my own esteemed quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, for the San Francisco 49ers, who to this day, still at every press conference, despite his pathetic performance on the field, continues to violate the NFL's strictures and wear Beats headphones. He's now covering up the Beats logo with a piece of tape. But look, Bose doesn't make pink headphones, okay?
Well, after all, where is an NFL starting Lima going to get $5,000 to pay that fine?
It's $10,000, but what the hell, you know? It's
apparently Bose is coming back to the Apple.
A few thousand here or there. It feels a little disrespectful to me at this point. Just don't wear any headphones, okay? You're not required to wear Bose headphones.
Oh, what? Okay, you're paying disrespect to the NFL. I thought you meant the other way around. It's like, you know what? These people are grown adults. And if you're telling them that, wear whatever headphones they want to wear, don't wear like the headphones that have like the giant rotating Beats illuminated logo on them, made just for promotional purposes. But for God's sake.
That's a good point.
Maybe treat them better when they retire so they don't need to pick up so much endorsement cash while they're playing.
Now that we know that they're an ungodly dangerous sport that's going to have lifelong repercussions, that the best of it is that their knees and joints will be shot by the time they're 43 and they'll require titanium earlobes by the time they're finished. Let them wear whatever headphones they want.
Bose has a problem, though, because there's a Beats eruption. I mean, all the players like Beats and they all are wearing Beats because that's what the young people wear, right? Here's Richard Sherman in pink Beats. Some other big guy, gold Beats. There's the over-the-ear Beats. That's Eli Manning, isn't it?
Tom Brady.
Oh, Brady, I'm sorry. Yeah, I could tell by the hair. Brady has the worst haircut ever. And there's Colin with his...
Spent all his money on Beats. No money left for supercuts.
Speaking of which, looks like the razor slipped when they gave Colin that haircut there. A little bit of a swirl in the top. What happened there?
I think that's very touching.
His part kind of went crazy there.
Oh, maybe it's a co-marketing deal with Nike.
It's a swoosh.
They can't make him cover up a logo if it's part of his body.
Right.
And if it's not a tattoo, that means he can keep changing the bidding process every single year.
I just want to say that even though we have a deal with Beats, you guys, if you want to wear Bose headphones, you go right ahead. Anytime. Actually, we don't have a deal with anybody. I wish we did.
Call Leo, make a deal.
iOS 8.1.2. When did that come out?
Right before the show.
What's new? Is it a security?
The biggest fix is, no, yeah, well, there's a bunch of fixes, but the biggest one is that previously people would lose ringtones or text tones, and because the recording industry will not allow Apple to make those re-downloadable, you had to jump through hoops to try to get them back, and that fixes this problem.
Fixes the ringtone issue.
Yeah.
It does, you know, but they say this every time. For more information on the security content, click this link, and then there's nothing
at
that
posted.
Link.
Yeah, it takes them a while to get that up.
Yeah. All right, so new iOS recommended, no problems to date.
Yeah, I downloaded it. I installed it right away. I made sure I tested everything that I could, and it was super solid. I think since iOS 8.1.1, if you had any quibbles or qualms about iOS 8, the big stuff has all been solved.
And 10.10.2 Yosemite is in beta now. It's out, and this is the newest seed. And Apple says this time the Wi-Fi issue is fixed.
And Chrome 6, too. Chrome was crashing if you had a trackpad. Anytime you touched the trackpad, it would crash Chrome, and that's working again now, too.
Yeah, that was not good.
No, it was deprecated code, but still, it's not. Yeah, it's not what you want.
Yeah, don't crash Chrome, please. All right. So when we'll see 10.10.2?
Oh, anytime now.
Yeah, 470 megabytes. If you already are in the pre-release version, you can download it from the App Store. In fact, it's probably been pushed upon you.
Yep. It's gotten really good with that process. You have to actually go and turn it off now if you want to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Typo, the company that was started by, was it Ashton Kutcher?
Ryan Seacrest.
I confused those two. I don't know why.
Indistinguishable.
is now doing an iPhone 6 version. That's the little BlackBerry style. In fact, BlackBerry sued him. Yeah. Keyboard that slips on as a case to your iPhone.
Yeah, this is a Typo 2, which they claim doesn't
look as much like BlackBerry, I have to say. A lot of people love that. Steve Gibson bought a bunch of them for his old iPhone.
Yeah, and I'm glad there are options out there for you. But wow, at this point, so many people have just, especially with soft keyboards that give you swipe and predictive typing, that are arguably fast. I think that we're losing a generation of people who even understand what it is like to type with a keyboard like that on a mobile device.
Right.
And then we get to the, okay, so you're going to name your company after inaccurate typing.
Have you guys tried the BlackBerry Passport yet with its really long keyboard?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
What do you think?
That was...
If you have square content, it's fantastic. Most of my content isn't square.
I have square content.
Instagram. If you do a lot of Instagram or Excel sheets, it's really good. But. Yeah.
I thought it was just different for the sake of difference. It's like if you're at this point, either you have a compelling reason. I also met for the 2 weeks ago. I met the first person in my life that I knew drinks a soda in New England called Moxie.
Moxie.
It's like, it's horrible stuff. I've never met anybody who drinks it and likes it. I've rarely even heard of that such a thing. And I've lived in New England for more than four decades now. At this point, first contact with this species, but there are people who like what they like, even if it's not something that other people like. And so BlackBerry is really in that sort of category. It is the Moxie of smartphones at this point, where the people who love it are now in a position where if this is the phone I like, there is nothing else like it. And so there are no options but to the nirvana that BlackBerry is creating for me. But anybody else who's not inside that group is never going to be converted to it at this point.
Just what flavor is Moxie?
If you left a car battery out after a long rain and then you put your mouth, I'm talking right on the positive terminal. That's pretty much what it's like. It sneaks up on you after in New England grocery stores. Again, there's like walls and walls of all kinds of different flavors, and there's always like 4-6 packs of Moxie, 2 2-liter bottles, and that's it. And so once I actually bought a can of this stuff because, well, I'm just curious as to why there's a market for 4-6 packs in every single store. And I poured it out, and it was nice and cold. I took a drink. And it tasted like a not terribly good cola. And I thought, okay, I mean, it's bad, but it's not awful. But it had that sort of thing where it was just after 30 seconds was interacting with the chemicals inside my mouth. And I swear to God, I actually had to brush my tongue to get the flavor out. Because it was just mounting and mounting. It's like you see these videos of people who like take a bite into a pepper, like a super hot pepper. And like, oh, I don't know why people are complaining. This isn't that at all. And then 30 seconds later, they're like,
it comes from the era tongue, when soda pop was really considered a medicine. In fact, it's one of the very first soda pops, if not the first soda pop. And so it really has a medicinal kind of a
flavor. It has a chemotherapeutic sort of effect.
Stephen King writes about the store in Maine, which I don't know if it's still there, sells nothing but Moxie. The Moxie store.
Again, if you like Moxie, there's only one soda like it, and that's how you make that's what you
so
base
you're
your business
on. The passport is the Moxie of smartphones,
and not necessarily in a bad way either. I'm saying that there are people that are always going to like. I want a tactile keyboard. I want this sort of attitude towards business communications, and now that's not really what anybody else is interested in at this point. So
I've received several hate messages from people who say you do not cover the BlackBerry sufficiently. I'm no longer listening to you.
Because you can still see a little corner of it peeking out. Just move the napkin a little bit more. There you go. Now we can't see it
but
at all.
But now we've had coverage. This is it. You're covering. Yeah. I don't know what to say. Renee, defend it. It's from your country. Should I cover? Should we do more coverage of BlackBerry?
It's huge in Indonesia, Leo.
I think it's the same guy who keeps writing me the email, but it's possible that there is a groundswell of four or five people who care.
I like that there's choice. I like that there's people trying different things. I mean, it's the same argument I'll give you for Samsung, that if you throw enough stuff at the wall, good ideas will filter down. It's just they just made so many miscalculations in the market that it's going to be tremendously difficult for them to come back to relevance anytime soon, which is sad because I like the fact that Canada has an operating system. They have two because they bought Qnix as well. Right. So I
was a huge BlackBerry fan. Had all the BlackBerry phones right up to 2007.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, this thing called the iPhone came along and it was kind of all over. The Orion spacecraft, a little kind of trivial note here. The Orion spacecraft, which is NASA's newest spacecraft and launch engine designed to bring crews to Mars and beyond. Did they actually launch last week? I know they were planning to, but then I heard it was scrubbed.
It was delayed for a day. It has had a completely successful mission, did two orbits, splashed down, and it's completely recovered.
It contains a computer. Now, remember, the computers that go out in space have to be hardened in special ways because there's more cosmic rays. There's lots of issues. Reliability is much more important than speed.
Yeah.
But the power PC chip in the Orion manned module is identical to the PowerPC from the iBook G3 that came out in 2003.
It's terrific.
The same as the 750FX. I think it is space hardened. It runs, in fact, I think all of our NASA's vehicles have been using chips based on the PowerPC platform for some time. 900 megahertz, bus speed of 166 megahertz, 512K online L2, on die L2 cache. Actually manufactured with a 130-nanometer process, which is pretty good. Probably better than the – well, maybe not. We're down to 14 nanometers currently with a Core-M. But they say, according to this article from Geek.com, it's about as powerful as the ARM chip used in the Galaxy S3. And that's all you need for the Orion spacecraft.
Amazing.
Kind of cool.
It's amazing. This is why I'm not quite so bummed out about the lapse in like crewed spacecraft to or human spacecraft to that take people to the moon and Mars and stuff, because we've got so many really cool things out there as it is. Orion is exciting because it's not just designed for one mission to ferry people from the ISS to the ground and back again. I mean, there is a spacecraft called Stereo. Actually, two spacecraft that are they're here to image the sun at all times. And one of the just to show you how interesting these long-term multi-year missions are. So one of them is out of commission only because it's sort of like tilted the wrong way. But at some point, it will continue to rotate, and now its solar panels will get enough energy that it can do another maneuver and get its mission back. And there's a pick of the week that I was going to pick, but I have to delay it for a week because I don't really understand it enough to talk about it yet. But there's one app that has every single space weather piece of information collected that NASA has generated all in one single app. And it just gives you an impression of here's how many spacecraft are out there on decades-long missions that are bringing back data every single moment of the day that is incredibly useful and even compelling to people who do not have PhDs in the correct sciences. So much great stuff is happening, and the design of these things, what they can do on essentially a watch battery and a Simon game CPU is just mind-boggling.
I have, if you're interested in this, we did an interview on triangulation last week with the program manager for Mars Curiosity, who is currently working on future Mars projects. Really interesting. He was awesome. Great. It was really fascinating. Let's see. Just a couple more stories that we want to take a break and get to our picks of the week, because it's time to wrap this up.
Yeah, it's worth talking about the app projections if they're on there.
Go ahead. Yeah. Let's do it.
So I tried to explain what was going on with some of these, but it's really difficult because extensibility.
Is this the Pirate's Bay stuff? What are we?
There's a couple things going on. So Apple introduced extensibility at WWDC, mm-hmm. and it arguably is the biggest change to the App Store since the App Store launch. And a bunch of apps were approved that now are being rejected. Some of them are getting put back in. It's just so people understand what happens. When new technology is introduced, developers rush to make apps to use them because Apple wants to promote those technologies, and they'll often be featured. Meanwhile, Apple tries to get the software finished, so in this case, iOS 8, and developer relations, the review teams, try to get as many apps approved as possible. As soon as an app is approved, the editorial team, which is not under the same division, tries to get them featured on the App Store because they want people to find all these apps. And it's a huge race, and not everyone is paying as much attention as they can because there's just so many apps. And then later, as the apps come for re-review or reviewers see them, they reject them because they're not in keeping with the original ideas that Apple had for how widgets or extensions or cloud providers should be used. So, for example, they originally didn't want you lingering in the notification center, so they wanted you to do something quick and get out. And pCalc, you could actually spend all your time in there.
Right.
Or with drafts, they wanted the button to stay in widgets, but the button in drafts sent you from the widget back to the app. And now the latest one, which is Panics, with iCloud Drive. On OS X, you can do anything you want with iCloud Drive. But on iOS, they wanted to restrict it to only files that you created or edited in those apps. And Panic would let you upload arbitrary files. So these are being rejected, and it's tough because editorial has featured these apps because they were originally approved. Developers have, users have gotten used to using those features, and there is an appeals process at Apple and all the way up to the executive committee for the App Store. And pCalc got reapproved, but it doesn't look like the drafts widget will be, the keyboard widget. It's unsure what's going to happen with Panic, and it creates this thing where Apple gets tons of negative press. Developers have no idea what's going to be approved and what's not going to be approved, so they have a huge chilling effect, and we get functionality that we might have come to rely on taken away from us. And I'm hard-pressed to find better solutions because they all have negatives too, but it seems like once again we're back in 2008, 2009 where it's just impossible to tell from one day to another what's going to be rejected and what's not.
So drafts, yep. which you've picked as a pick of the week from Panic Software, does what?
Transmit. It was letting you upload any... Transmit. Yeah, it was letting you upload arbitrary files to iCloud Drive. Or other providers.
And so here's drafts, which you refer to in the article. What does drafts do?
You could hit that plus button. It would take you to the app and start a new draft.
Okay. So the idea was quick open a document.
Yeah. So they previously...
And which I really like, and pre-populate it with what's on the clipboard.
Yeah, so the previously Apple rejected launchers from widgets because they didn't want one app launching another app. Turns out they don't want apps launching. And one of the problems is that people say Apple is doing this, but Apple has different organizations. There's a bunch of different people involved. They all have different opinions, and there's different opinions on what these widgets should and shouldn't do. And it looks like sometimes some people are winning, other times other people are winning. But from the outside, it just looks capricious and arbitrary.
Right.
Well, especially because it is. I mean, it is true that internally there are all kinds of debates and there's a discussion about what the appropriate use of certain widget actions are. God dang it. Sorry about this. I had exactly the document that I needed to talk about this open, and now I've had to restart my MacBook. It's exactly as Renee says, that there are all but kinds of different, not just factions of thought inside of Apple, but different companies, so to speak, inside of Apple that have different, will talk about different things for different reasons, and their wires get crossed a lot. But the thing is, Apple is not a garage startup. They're not a kitchen table production with eight people. They are one of the largest tech titans in this world. They should have their act together. And so problem, it's just, it seems like a problem with this, that they should be able to solve, that they don't just simply put an app out there and then decide, oh, wait, with the one voice, that external voice that Apple has, they say that this app obeys all of our rules and we want our users to have it. And then, no, actually, this app does not obey our rules. We do not want our users to have it. The second thing that's kind of troubling, and I hope that I can get this back up again, the developer of Launcher had a really good blog post, and yeah. I really wanted to be able to quote it directly. I hope someone else can pull it up because, again, I'm restarting right now. But he's saying that when he was in his conversations with Apple about why his app was rejected for similar reasons from iOS 8, it was originally accepted and then rejected later on and had to be removed. They said that they occasionally – that Apple – this is from his conversations with Apple, that sometimes Apple will use a app as an example because and this is according to his blog post, the best way to get the word out about what a developer should not do is to have a high profile takedown so that people can know about this. They will look at this, try to figure out what it was that this one app did that they should now not do in the future. I don't know that, again, this is based on this person's description of his conversations with Apple, not something
you're talking
that
about
I know.
Greg Gardner, who is a creator at Cromulent Labs.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really, really very good.
There is a change.org petition. I don't know if you could petition Apple for anything, but
yeah. So I mean, if that's true, that's kind of remarkable that they would let this person spin their wheels 8 months of development on an app just to, you know, we feel as though this is we can use you to make a statement to deliver a message. So I don't know if this is true or not. I think it would be remarkable if it were as simple as he's describing. But even beyond that, there's the problem of I really don't think that great apps get written if developers aren't allowed to stretch the rules a little bit to say, here is technically what you are allowing me to do with this. And so therefore, I'm going to use this in a very special and different way that no one has ever considered before. That's how brilliant stuff gets created. Once you say that, no, we have thought ahead to the 9 ways that this API can be used, you are not allowed to create a 10th way that this is going to be used. I think I worry that 5 years down the road, that leads to a very boring catalog of apps that can never really surprise us. So I just hope this isn't a sign of bad things to come.
Greg writes, at this point, I've become quite disillusioned with iOS development and Apple as a company. It seemed they were opening up the platform and allowing for you fool, and allowing for more inter-app communications in iOS 8. But this decision shows they still feel they know what's best for the users, even if users disagree.
But they have difference of opinion internally as to what's better for the user. Like, I think what Andy said.
By the way, I just got to point out your article in iMore has right next to it a nice big ad for the Moto X, which I highly recommend. If people are bothered by this, they go out and buy.
that's
why I do not use an iPhone. This is the slippery slope you go down when you say we are going to tightly control what's available on this platform.
So
then
the one thing that
choose.
The one thing that I think is different than, like, I think Andy's absolutely right, but the one thing is that they don't put these rules because there are a lot of people from engineering to app store management who want to see those kinds of apps. And they don't want it, like, for example, if they made a no calculator rule for widgets, we wouldn't get pcalc. But because that rule didn't exist, James Thompson made it, someone tried to reject it, it got appealed and it got bumped up, and someone said, no, this is great, we want this kind of app.
Yeah.
And that'll happen with a few examples. And over time, that'll get sorted out and we won't get these rejections. But it's a horrible way to sort out that process.
This is what happens when you set yourself up as an arbiter. And I think it's just, that's why I prefer Android. It's really one of the chief reasons I prefer Android. Period.
It's just a difference in philosophy.
But it's a philosophy I completely and utterly reject, and here you're seeing exactly why.
But I'm saying there's positives and there's negatives. I was this morning, again, the hellacious rain, it really did. I'm looking at the things we might be talking about today, and it really did occur to me that this rain is symbolic of the difference between the Android approach and the iOS approach, where it is raining like hell outside. The iOS answer is, I'm not going to let you leave the house because you're going to get soaked if you go out there. No, I'm not going to let you leave the house. the Android, and so that's good because you are going to get soaked. You don't want to get wet. You'll thank me later that you decided to do your errands 4 hours from now when it's sunny outside. The Android approach is, I'm not going to tell you it's raining outside. You do get soaked sometimes, but you do have the ability to say, yeah, I really, if I don't get my haircut in the next 3 hours, I will not be able to get a haircut before my dinner plans tonight. I have to go. I know I'm going to get wet. I'm okay with getting wet. That's much, much better than the consequences of my not being able to do this thing that you don't want me to do. I'm glad, as always, this is my mantra. If I have a custom T-shirt, it's going to have to say that I like it when consumers get to choose what their solution is. And for some of them, their better solution is going to be iOS. For some of them, the better approach is going to be Android.
Yeah.
And it's worth pointing out that for a lot of people, they have their Tumblr share extension. They have their BuzzFeed widget. They have so much things from extensibility that it doesn't really affect them if drafts or it's mostly the kind of people who are on the show or listen to the show, the kind of people like us who aspire to more. And I'm actually like you, iOS, I was talking about this with Christina Warren last night. You see custom keyboards in iOS now. If those weren't extremely popular on Android, maybe we wouldn't. So if we see tons of applications that are just groundbreaking, stellar, that are moving Android devices, maybe that'll affect change at Apple. But right now, there are certain people I think who believe that if you hit that button, they don't want someone to switch apps because it'll confuse them, it'll take them somewhere they're not used to. Someone could use it to try to sell them an app. And they're winning some of these fights. And it's an argument as to whether or not, you know, that's a good decision. But that argument is happening so late in the cycle that it's affecting a lot of developers' work.
Yeah. It's such a wrongheaded way to do this. And it
does make Apple look like they don't have their crap together. And that's something they did for no other reason. They need to be able to say, we know what we're going to send a clear message. One department of Apple knows what another department is doing, and they're working together. This is the reason why, like at HP and like at Microsoft in the old days, they would make stuff where we made a printer that the operating system does not support yet, or we have a notebook that basically can't fit inside this other accessory that we made just 6 months earlier. And this is why we were releasing a product and then canceling it 30 days later. That is a society in chaos. Apple has always been very, very proud, justly so, of the idea that we have a plan for everything. Not everything that we make is successful. But even when we made the iPod Hi-Fi, we had other products that were perfectly suited for it and a world in which it could succeed.
So I did a piece last week where I was basically just ruminating, what if Apple had a high profile, very public facing VP of App Store? You know, because Tim Cook famously put all software under Craig Federighi, all design under Johnny Ive, and that's had great effect. They put online and retail under Angela Ahrens, and that's producing really good effects too. So what if they took the parts of the App Store that were under Eddie Q, that were under Phil Schiller, and had a very public facing vice president of App Store whose only job was to make the App Store delightful for customers and for developers, to fix review, to fix search, to fix all these things that all of us have been complaining about for years? I think that would be a super interesting position at Apple.
That'd be an interesting move, but he would have to have a cricket bat and the power to use it.
It's not
because
given to him by her Majesty Elizabeth the Wizard.
You're fantasizing. That's not going to happen.
No, they've done it with other things.
Okay,
I'm saying.
I think it's a cultural issue. I think it's absolutely a mindset. It's like saying, you know, I mean, it's a centrally planned economy. It's going to stay a centrally planned economy. That's fundamental to Apple, and there's definitely advantages. I'm not saying there aren't.
You could have that without the mixed messages.
Screw up. Absolutely. But I think it's just what happened. You've painted yourself into a corner. It's what happens when you set yourself up as an arbiter of what can and cannot happen on a platform. You're going to be the arbiter, and it's going to be arbitrary from time to time. And developers just have to live with that. They do, because they want to be on the Apple platform. I wonder, though. I mean, I think in the long run, doesn't this hurt your developer relations?
For Candy Crush Soda, I mean, does it make a difference for them?
Yeah, it doesn't care. They don't care.
Developer relations has never been really great. It's always been, here is where the pile of money is. Or, perhaps more to the point, here is where the large audience is. You either want to be in front of that large audience, in which case you will, you can either be Craig Ferguson, or you can be Jimmy Fallon. If you want to be Jimmy Fallon, then you're going to have to submit to a whole bunch of rules that make it very inconvenient do exactly what you want to do. If you want to be the 1230 guy who has a smaller audience, you can have a robot skeleton sidekick. You can have two guys in a horse costume.
Right.
You can do whatever you want.
I mean, there are a lot of people in developer relations who care really deeply about this stuff too. I mean, it's not a hive mind or a...
And no one's suggesting there isn't. It's just, again, all I'm concerned about is, number one, I just think that whatever they choose to whatever face they choose to present to the outside world, Apple is more than capable of getting that act together. There, for other companies, that would be an unsolvable problem. It would require a huge restructuring, or they wouldn't have the resources or the talent. Apple has all of those things. It's because they really haven't decided that the problem is big enough yet. When I'm in beard stroking mode, I wonder if at some point developers will get so fed up that they'll say the audience is no longer big enough for me to think it's worthwhile. The advantages of the Xcode environment are also not big enough for me to want to deal with all the headaches of dealing with Apple developing. I'm going to move to Android. I'm going to move to other platforms. And this is not a prediction, and this is not even a real front of my mind worry, but boy, you've heard me use this phrase before. Sometimes I think about a company that is no longer as powerful as it used to be 10 years ago. And then you, at that point in which they're all failing, you think back to, can we identify problems 10 years ago that have led to its state right now? I feel as though if that were to happen to Apple 10 years from now, we'd say, yeah, see, they overstated, they overconsidered what the value that people would attach to developing software just for their platform. And at some point, they put so much pressure on users or developers that those just basically like holding an egg, they crushed both of them.
Real quickly, because we're way over time, new Apple TV download today, new firmware. What's new, Renee?
YouTube app now has ads, which means that YouTube is no longer restricting what videos go to the Apple TV. Usually they wouldn't send videos that had ads attached. Now, because there's ads.
Somebody said this means if Google wouldn't have updated their YouTube app so significantly, it actually now matches the other platforms. If they thought that Apple was going to change Apple TV soon.
I don't think it means anything like that.
Okay. Just asking.
You also have the UFC channel. You have Fusion. And there was a couple other channels. So you can get all your mixed martial arts right delivered to your TV.
Okay. It's starting to get really creaky.
There's a daily, what's that? The other video service, Daily Motion, I think it's
called. Daily Motion's on there. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's creaky because only Apple can add apps to the Apple TV, and now this grid is getting bigger and bigger and bigger and longer and longer and longer, and it's just
it's almost like they should have a new version under development.
There's got to be.
Again, if you are familiar with the people involved in Apple TV development, you know that they're an all-star lineup right now, and yeah. That probably would be the case if they weren't working on something.
Yeah, see, that's what you look at, right? Who's working there? If Apple's putting resources behind it, then you know. And I'm looking forward to this Dashlane, which I don't use. I use LastPass, but I am now thinking about moving to Dashlane if you're using 1Password, LastPass, or some other password manager, because they are going to add a feature. It's in beta right now where you press one button and it changes all your passwords for 75 of the biggest sites. It even includes second-factor authentication sites. So I think that's a great idea. Maybe every password manager will say, oh, we should do that.
Yeah, 1Password had Watchtower, which was really cool because it would tell you where you had duplicate passwords and help you change
it. Yeah, LastPass does that too. But they still automation. Have to go onesie-twosie to each site and change it. If I could push one, apparently Dashlane acquired a company that did this, so maybe they will be the exclusive on this. I do know a lot of people use Dashlane. It's very Mac-ish, very pretty, very nicely done. Anyway, just a thought.
Just use something, please.
Yeah, please. Whatever you do, use something. A break ahead, coming up, your picks of the week. Including a new game from Buzz Aldrin that just came out. You're talking about space. Was that the one you were going to talk about, Andy?
No.
Okay. I haven't played with it yet, but I'm just going to observe that it is out. Our show today brought to you by Audible, the place to go for audiobooks. I used to have this really good rule for myself that I would only listen to one audiobook at a time. You know, if you look at my bedside table, there's 12 books that I'm physical books I'm in the middle of. But I always had the rule. I will listen from beginning to end one audiobook at a time. That rule completely gone to hell. I am now listening to 5 different books at the same time, and I love every one of them. I'm really enjoying the variety and quality of Audible books. If you have not yet listened to audiobooks, really, there really is no other choice than audible.com. I invite you to go to audible.com/MacBreak because we're going to get you a free book of your choice today. But let's ask Andy what he's listening to first.
Easy pick this time. It's The Art of Asking by Amanda Palmer. That's a name that a lot of people are familiar with. She's a musician. She became in the news a couple years ago because she had a really successful Kickstarter to fund and pre-sell her next album. And then she turned the experience and the idea of becoming an artist who She did a TED talk that got several million hits. Very, very beautiful, put together about the connection between the artist and the community that supports them, and the how it's okay to be a little bit more open about how if you I want to do the next album, if you buy it in advance, I don't want necessarily free money to do it, but if you buy it in advance, that will give me the funds to do the, get the studio time, or I want to do a tour. If anybody has a spare room that I can stay in, that's great too. This is sort of that TED talk expanded into a 100,000 word book, and it reads more like a beautiful blog post, actually, and I mean that in every positive way, where it's a combination of a memoir and a talk about the evolution of an artist, and also the evolution of the music industry, and how her personality and her life and her business and her art kind of meld together. That's why I call it a blog post. It's really very well edited, very well put together, and the star of the show is the fact that I really think the best way to do it is on Audible and not on text, because of course she reads it herself, and when you hear someone telling their own story, it's even more compelling when you're hearing that story in their own voice spoken. I think you get a whole bunch of understanding and context that you don't get when it's words on a page. Also, she's a musician, so you get to hear her play music and some tracks from her career. And so it really is probably one of my top 10 audiobooks ever. Just such a pleasant experience start to finish.
Amanda Palmer, The Art of Asking, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Let People Help. You get that for free. If you're also looking for other recommendations, I might point you to Audible's new list, The Best of 2014, which has recommendations in many different categories. I have not even heard of this one, the audiobook of the year, Hamlet, Prince of Denmark, a novel. But there are books in every category, including As You Wish, the Princess Bride book, which you recommended and I have downloaded, haven't yet listened to. Andy, I think I'm going to pick this one. I have a credit remaining right now. This is The Great Courses. Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is actually a professor. And this is the course he teaches on the inexplicable universe, Unsolved Mysteries. And this is one of the things that's really great about Audible. They now have the Great Courses catalog. So you can get that too. But here's how you get one free. Good luck choosing. One free. Merely go to audible.com/MacBreak. Sign up for the gold account. That means a book a month every 30 days. You also get the audio digest of the either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal as part of your subscription. You pay nothing in the first 30 days. Cancel any time in the first 30 days. You'll get to keep the book. But I don't think you're going to want to. This stuff that is so amazing and Audible, 150,000 titles. I wish I had more time in my life to listen to Audible. It's brought reading back into my life, and I think it will do the same for you. Audible.com/MacBreak. Andy Iannocco, pick of the week.
I got two storage picks this time. We were talking about Blu-ray rippers, so I reached over and I plucked out the Blu-ray drive that I use to rip discs from. This is a no-name. It's called the eParts Blu-ray drive. You can get it on Amazon for $40. There are already people on Twitter saying, which one specifically are you using? Because not all of them will work with a Blu-ray ripper. This one works perfectly fine. Again, it's not spectacular. This is plastic. It's not milled aluminum, but it works perfectly for all my tasks. And it's just damn dirt cheap. The second one is also related to, we're talking about SSDs. This is my external SSD drive. It's in a case that I really, really like. This is, again, dirt cheap. This is a USB 3.0 case that costs less than $20. But the really good selling point is that it opens up without any tools. So what you can do is you can just simply use your fingers like this, pop the top off, and then simply swap out whatever SSD or spinning disk drive you have. It just lifts right out. This is maybe more practical for SSDs than spinning drives, but it means that given how cheap like the lower capacity drives are, I can travel with my entire like 250 gigabyte music collection, and also the 500 gigabytes that I use for like video editing and photo editing without having to just pop $700 for the largest terabyte drive I can find, risk that one is going to fail. You can travel easily with a couple of these and swap things in and out, or you can buy a spinning drive and swap things in and out. I would not use it as a floppy where you're keeping swapping things like five times a day, because I'm not sure that the mechanisms of the SSD would really, really enjoy you doing that. But it does mean that it's very, very easy to have multiple sources of storage and then either one of these drives or even just multiple copies of this enclosure. Again, it's like less than $20. It's not like it's made out of one block of premium aluminum, but again, it's plastic. It will last just perfectly fine. I've been using it for the past couple months, and I'm very glad with that purchase. These are both things that I just bought with my own damn money.
And one thing that you've got to give them credit for, the company name Inatech, is the same name. You knew what I was going, where I was going. As the company in Office Space.
It's the only thing I could think about during your entire review, Andy.
Yeah.
It's spelled a little differently.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah.
It's legal.
I'm going to have you come back over the weekend and finish this hard drive case. I love Inatech. Do you think they knew when they named that company?
No, I think that, you know, for people who can't afford a genuine Inatech drive, they want to get the off-brand.
I love it. Rene Ritchie, something was going on backstage there. I don't know what he's been up to. I gave you a few extra seconds so you could prepare your pick of the week.
Oh, I was just moving the giant gray curtain of doom away. It was starting to fall on me, so I tried to move it to the other side.
Okay. What's up?
So my pick of the week is in honor of the discussion we just had with Andy. It's one of my favorite apps. I'm pretty sure I've picked it before, but I use it all the time. It's called AirVideo HD, and it does one job really, really well. You run a small app on your Mac, and you tell it what directories you want it to look in. And from that point, you can stream any video in those directories directly to your iPad, directly to your iPhone, and even better, press the AirPlay button and send them directly to your Apple TV. So there's a lot of times when I am admittedly too lazy to get up and go get the Blu-ray, or I've bought a version of the movie on iTunes that doesn't include the features I want to watch, because the special features aren't always the same. And this way, if I happen to have it living on my server, or if I have home movies or anything else that's on my Mac, I can just with a couple taps, get that video loaded into the app, watch it on my iPhone, watch it on my iPad, or AirPlay it directly to my Apple TV. It just does that job fantastically well. And awesome. They keep improving it.
Awesome. This just came out, and I'm not going to review it because I haven't tried it. It comes from Slytherin. Slytherin Games. Buzz Aldrin's Space Program Manager, Road to the Moon, the ultimate game of space exploration. I don't know anything about this, but I'm pointing it out. You have to buy it, but it's also available on Steam, $29.99. It is available for Mac, and it looks cool. Looks cool. Read about it. I don't know anything about it. But the fact that it came from the second person to walk on the face of the moon gives it a little bit of credibility.
Once again, proving that if you can say, hey, I walked on the moon, you'll win any argument.
Anything.
When I was on the moon, I said.
Yeah, exactly.
We are ordering the poo-poo platter for eight. We're not ordering separate entrees.
All right. On the moon. We love you, Buzz. Yeah. Anyway, this looks interesting. It's a simulator of some kind. But it's not like flying. You have to actually plan the space. You know, you have funds, and you have to plan your space race. So that's kind of cool. I don't think that's the Orion, unfortunately. It looks like the lunar module.
Nope, that is.
Yeah, land that on the land the LEM, then you can drive around in the rover.
So much better than Mario Kart.
our show has come to a grinding halt, but thank you so much for being here. Security now running a little late, so we're going to get right to it. So, Mr. Andy Iannocco, thank you for your contribution. As always, today, Chicago Sun-Times, the celestial waste of bandwidth, and two cows looking to jump over the moon.
There you go.
It looks pretty sharp there. I'm not sure I want to jump over that. We thank Rene Ritchie from iMore.com. Also, always really wonderful. As a contribution to the show, we appreciate it. Thanks for being here. You'll find Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Do watch live. We appreciate when you're in the chat room. You can even join us in studio. We've had a fairly large studio audience today. Come and go. But they had to run. That's okay. Oh, they're going to come back later? Okay. You can email tickets at twit.tv if you'd like to be here in studio. Well, we'd appreciate that so we could put a chair out for you. We also invite you to give us some help. Are we still looking for best ofs?
At this point, I think for Mac Break, I think we're all good. I mean, I'll take whatever input people want.
Well, if you want to help us, twit.tv/best of, but we've found enough to fill our...
But you know what? We're doing best ofs for all of our shows, any help is appreciated.
And Jason's doing most of them. It's for our holiday week. Christmas is, what, Wednesday? And so we're going to take that whole week off. And most of our shows will have special editions or best ofs all through the week. There will be new content for everybody to watch, so please do. Don't forget, New Year's Eve, we'll be back. We're going to have our special 24 hours of 2015, a benefit for UNICEF, which is doing great work in Africa to help children with Ebola. And just, it's one of the greatest charities ever. And we hope to raise a lot of money with your help. And we're going to have a lot of fun. And we want you to watch live 3 a.m. Pacific on New Year's Eve to 3 a.m. Pacific on New Year's Day. We will also, and the reason we started doing this last year is because we wanted to celebrate New Year with you all over the globe. And there are 27 different time zones. And believe it or not, this is the map of time zones. We have people who are going to be calling in from the vast majority of time zones. And we'll be doing the countdown and the balloon drop each hour. But we are looking for some. And if you are in this area or you know somebody who is, I want you to go to twit.tv/NYE. Fiji, Tuvalu, Marshall Islands. Actually, we should just say the UTCs. Plus 12. Plus 1130 is Norfolk Island. Plus 7 is Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam, Jakarta, Burma. Plus 630. Bangladesh, Kazakhstan. Plus 6. Plus 5, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Pakistan. Anybody in the plus 5 area, though, we would welcome you. I don't know why we don't have somebody from Alaska yet. Minus 9. GMT minus 9. If you're in Alaska, twit.tv/NYE. And the one that's going to be hard, Jarvis Island, is the last to welcome 2015. They are minus 11, UTC minus 11. It's in the U.S. Samoa. I think it's a bird preserve. I don't think anybody lives there. But if you're in Jarvis Island, actually, if you're in Midway, you could do it too. But just go to our website, twit.tv/NYE. We are really looking good. We are really looking good. We've got people from Afghanistan, from Moscow, from Finland, from Bermuda, from New York, of course, Chicago, Sydney. It's going to be really fun. Really, really fun. That's New Year's Eve. I hope you'll come by and watch. That'll be a lot of fun, too. Is that all we have to plug? I think it is. I think we can now say safely, without any contradiction, it's time to get back to work. Because break time is over.